To better your best and your world, you need to dig deep and grow. Join us as top experts, leaders, and creators uncover powerful insights to help you grow in life and in work. And now, your host, Michael McAvoy. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of Dig Deep Grow, the show dedicated to helping you better your best and your world. I'm your host, Michael McAvoy, and we are live. We're going to be talking about Facebook. The new book that we're going to discuss is with Dr. Susana Flores, and it's called Face Hooked, How Facebook Affects Our Emotions, Relationships, and Lives. Dr. Flores is a clinical psychologist, holds a doctorate in clinical psychology and a master's in counseling psychology. She practices in Chicago. So, Dr. Flores, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me on your show.
Okay. Is it okay to call you Susana?
Yes, it is.
All right, great. So the book is called Face Hooked. You've chosen a group of people about a billion strong who might have certain tendencies. And we're going to talk a little about what happens when you have a large community like this. All the things that happen throughout the world are no different here. But I'm first interested to ask you if there was a particular draw to writing on this subject.
Yes. More and more psychologists, including myself, were experiencing a new dimension in our client's presentation, which was Facebook. Different people were presenting complaints of either reacting to certain interactions or certain things that they saw on their computer screens through their news feeds, problems resulting in relationships or loss of friendships or due to misunderstanding, unfriending, blocking, some passive aggressive posts. And it wasn't just my clients. I started noticing changes even with my colleagues, with my friends, and even myself. And that was the intrigue of it as well, is that I'm not one to usually edit or filter myself. And I was noticing just a little bit of apprehension with, well, I want to say this, but delete, this thought of how is this going to be construed by other people. And so I just noticed that most people were really editing themselves or performing, as I like to say. Worst end spectrum, it led to some hospitalizations where I had to take certain clients to a psychiatric unit. And that is when, the thought of writing a book became reality. That is when all the doubts of, well, I'm not a writer, I'm not, I'm a psychologist, I've never written anything before. That was doubt or no doubt. I realized that this book really needed to be written because I wanted to help people.
Were you working with people who were technology related in that you had a clientele that was more connected, or is it just the general population?
No, it was just a general population. I was treating lawyers, I was treating IT people, but nurses, teachers, other psychologists, just regular, everyday people that were facing, either work-related stress. That was probably the greatest population that I had, especially working in downtown Chicago. A lot of people during their lunch hours, work-related stress, family stress, relationship problems or marital problems or coping with their teenagers, just regular people. So nothing out of the ordinary. And every day or at least every other day, started hearing about anxiety or depression as a result of some digital interaction.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you say digital interaction, are we talking about Facebook in particular or any social network, any communication over the internet?
When it came to adults, it was mostly Facebook, because with over, 1.3 billion people, and the numbers are still climbing, Facebook is the most popular social media network. Teens are still on Facebook, but they're migrating to other sites. So they were more prone to mention things like, Twitter or YouTube, Instagram. But most of the problems occurred on Facebook.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you a little about the difference between, say, those under 18 and those above 18. Okay. There's some different dynamics there, but let me ask first on, so Facebook came along. It wasn't the first social network.
Right.
There were many before it. Is there anything in particular about the way Facebook operates that makes it different, that brings out some of these tendencies in people that weren't in other ones?
That's an excellent question. I think there's definitely more of an addictive factor with Facebook in that I call it like the slot machine effect. That's the way I refer to it in my book. Like when you're playing a slot machine, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, but you better keep playing. Otherwise, the next person to sit in your seat is going to win your work, right? Is going to gain your winnings. And Facebook is very similar in the sense of its newsfeed, is that sometimes there's something interesting, sometimes there isn't, but you better keep checking it. Otherwise, you experience what's known as FOMO, or fear of missing out. Mm-hmm. And you feel left out. And even people who've tried to take a Facebook vacation due to feeling overwhelmed or depressed or so, low self-esteem, other problems related to it, find that they can't really stay off of it for long. Most people anyway, because of that addictive element. Additionally, the way that it's set up, it allows or almost encourages, passive aggressive posts or misunderstandings or double meanings, and selective, photos and tagging can be a very big problem. You know, people are under this illusion that there is privacy on Facebook, and there isn't. It's an illusion, because someone can very simply copy and paste a photograph or tag or screenshot something, and so people discover soon enough that one, things are not as private as they seem, and the emotional effect of certain posts carry a bigger punch than is versus just speaking to someone directly to them in reality, because of the public platform of Facebook.
So could you talk, obviously in a general way, with some of the particular, psychoses or however you want to determine them, what are the kind of things that you're finding in specific?
More than anything, I would say it's anxiety. And I specialize in anxiety-related disorders, anywhere from just mild anxiety to adjustment to post-traumatic stress. And especially when it came to relationships or certain misunderstandings or people coming across what I call emotional manipulators on Facebook, those that purposely just try to mess with people or ruin their relationships just for the sake of seeing it. I would notice some people mentioning that they would get so overwhelmed that they felt like, this is a direct quote, I felt so overwhelmed that I felt like throwing myself in front of a train. Or I felt, like that there was no other way of living because they were living and functioning through these multiple messages that they were receiving from multiple people at multiple times throughout the day. And with so many messages, I often wondered, like, are we designed to handle all of that input? And when you begin to spend that much time on Facebook, you begin to function out of this alternative reality. And so in one particular case, there was a psychotic break. And I know that sounds extreme, but that did happen. Aside from that, depression, there are studies that show that people are comparing their realities to what they see on a screen of what other people choose to selectively post, right? So we see people's vacations, we see them 10 pounds thinner or 15 years younger, they're doing charity work, they're deworming orphans in Somalia, they are going to the gym, right? And then they go to the gym again. We see that one a lot, right? They are training for something and more charity work, more I'm caring for my elderly parents, more my child got this honor roll, etc. Everything is embellished. And even those of us that don't try to embellish, we are editing ourselves in some ways. So the self, and that's nothing different than reality, as you put it, is that, keeping up with the Joneses is nothing new. We all try to put our best foot forward, of course. And why would anyone want to hear anything depressing or so, except for the fact that more and more people are seeking external validation, right? This like feature, right? That is the hook of Facebook. That's one of the many hooks. Is how many likes can I get? How many friends can I get? Can you endorse me? Can you validate me? Is what I'm doing important enough for you to notice? And so we're becoming performers and our friends are becoming our audience. So ultimately that leads, when we don't get enough likes, when we don't get enough validation, that leads also, aside from anxiety, it leads to depression.
And would you say that the anxiety that's caused is really from this this whole idea of not feeling up to snuff or something like that?
Right. It's feeling exactly not up to snuff, or just trying to decipher what something meant or what it didn't mean, or if something was directed at you. People who are supposed to be friends all of a sudden are doing these passive aggressive posts towards each other when, based on a misunderstanding or a miscommunication, they're no longer speaking to each other. And so a very basic tool that we use in therapy is to just check in with a person. You know, when in doubt, just give them a call and just say, when you said this, this is the way that I interpreted it. Is this what you meant? Mm-hmm. You don't have that luxury on social media. Usually, you know, you see something and you make an assumption and it's very reactionary, right? And in our today's world, everything is speed. We no longer like to hear voice messages. We prefer to text. We no longer are hanging out with each other as often. Studies have showed that. We're no longer attending dinner parties or making plans to engage with each other as much because we're engaging with each other every day through social media. Right. So this, when you're beginning to function based on these very brief encounters, misunderstandings are going to happen. And that will, of course, lead to anxiety. It's called like a cognitive dissonance. That's a psychological term. It's a disconnect where, you know, something doesn't make sense. So this person's supposed to be my friend. And yet there is a passive aggressive post, or what I consider to be a passive aggressive post, a jab at me. And so I feel the need to retaliate. And we see this a lot even with political, during the political campaign time, right? Mm-hmm. There's jabs back and forth between the parties. It's this one-upmanship, right? I know better mm-hmm. you know, than you, and I have to prove it, not just to you or to me, but I have to prove it to all of our mutual friends. So depression and anxiety will result.
Get this podcast delivered to you automatically. You can subscribe via iTunes, Stitcher, and more. You'll find the links here or on our website, digdeepgrow.com. There are technologists who, when the social media, when the internet communication of internet came along, really praised, you know, all of the new channels of communications and how people, who couldn't communicate before were suddenly able to do it every day. Mm-hmm. But then, after a number of years, I have heard these same people say, you know, I'm beginning to rethink this whole thing because, in the case of this woman I'm thinking of, her daughter would be texting her sitting on the couch the same house, you know. So can you talk a little about, I don't know how long you've been practicing, but mm-hmm. a little about the healthy communication that used to be. Right. And what we're doing now is really kind of breaking down our ability as humans to communicate.
Absolutely. And, you know, I will be the first one to say it. I've said it many times throughout my book. I love Facebook. I love social media. That was part of the intrigue. I think that this is an amazing time in our history. We're able to communicate with each other like never before. And, you know, even the younger generations, the digital natives, the teenagers, they have a voice more than any other time in history. We can connect with someone, you know, in seconds who is found across the globe. And we're getting more informed. For those of us who, let's say, are on the shyer end, or let's say have a disability, or for whatever reason live in a rural part, are not able to have as much access to others that they would like. The social media in all aspects is wonderful in the ability to connect with like-minded individuals. Now, that being said, another one I can't deny is, you know, because of social media, we've seen it even in the news lately, is we can create even political, governmental change. I'm thinking right now of the protests in Egypt that started based out of one Facebook page, right, that mobilized and inspired people. And so, you know, we do have a stronger voice than ever before. Now, on the opposite end of the coin, the more we are connecting, the lonelier a lot of people feel. Even if you have, you know, 1,000 or 3,000 friends, like, is that really something to brag about? Like, the essence of our friendships are changing. Everything is becoming shallower and briefer. Mm-hmm. And so with these, communications or these interactions that are more shallow, in nature, we no longer feel the need to make efforts to engage as humans. And I know that sounds like an extreme statement too, but as humans, we function out of our five senses, right? We like to smell good coffee, taste an amazing piece of chocolate, enjoy the warmth of our lover's arms, and see a beautiful sunset. And instead of seeing and really absorbing, let's say the beautiful sunset, we're more prone to take a picture of it and record it. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, again, for the need for validation of like, look at what I see. We're caring more about what other people think versus what we think. And so, we're beginning to ignore our inner voice. And instead of making our inner voice stronger than the outer noise, we are more externally focused. And that's the problem, because opinions are in and of themselves are just opinions. And so if we are basing our self-worth on other people's opinions or approval of us, we're bound to be disappointed, because just like anything, opinions wax and wane as well. Right. So people feel more depressed and more lonely. It is affecting relationships right now. There is a 20% divorce rate in the United States alone directly attributed to Facebook. Hmm. Whether it's it could involve anything related to jealousy, to people reconnecting with ex-flames. And again, they're functioning based on what they choose to post. Mm-hmm. And so they are having an affair with an illusion. Right. And so very rarely do these, the minute the plane ticket is bought, or very rarely, do these relationships work out or, to fruition. I've also met with several clients who had to break up or divorce with their spouses because they were paying more attention to their Twitter followers or fans, right, or their Facebook mm-hmm. Followers versus their relationships, and they felt obligated. I have fans that are reliant on me. Mm-hmm. I have to update. And so, some people have argued that, before social media, there were newspapers, there was a radio, there were television. And the significant difference between these forms of media and social media is that when we were watching television, we were watching it together and laughing at shows together and commenting about what we were seeing together. Mm-hmm. And now, especially in terms of relationships, you have spouses or partners that are right next to each other, right? And yeah. Or at dinner, we've seen it, and they're texting other people. So even though we're engaged in the physical realm, right next to each other, in our minds, we are somewhere else. So mm-hmm. we're no longer present with each other. And that sends a very powerful message. You are not that important to me.
Right.
And right, that affects your friendships, and that will ruin your marriage.
So how do you see that translating to the society at large? We're going through some turmoil in the world. I don't know if it's linked at all, but I'm just curious what you think the state of the world is, or even just American culture, because of all this.
I think that on the one hand, there's greater accountability with what people present to others. Because we're so information savvy now. The problem, a very big problem, and any medical doctor will agree with me, at least I hope so, is that people are believing what they are seeing. And the reason I mention medical doctors is because all of a sudden they'll see something and they will say, I can't do this for my child because then he or she's going to become sick. And without any level of research or without asking the experts about something, people are self-diagnosing with several things. When I met with several teenagers, that was more than any other group, that was the alarming one, because not only were cell phones or their smartphones almost like an extension of their arm, they had to have it within arm's reach. It was a part of them, right? Mm-hmm. Many of them told me that the reason they prefer to interact over social media or text or voice calls or even real life interactions is because they could not tolerate pauses in conversation. So when I mentioned a pause, right? Like after a sentence, there's a pause, and they said, yes, like right now you're pausing and that's uncomfortable. I don't know what to do with that. And so I said, how is that different than texting or IMing or sending some instant message over social media? And they said, well, if someone doesn't respond right away, and they are expected to respond right away, right? That means that they're probably preoccupied with something, but they'll get back to me. Now, if there's a pause in conversation, that means that it's uncomfortable and we can't handle that. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was mind blowing, right? And I didn't hear it just from one group. I heard it from several. And that means that, you know, even just pushing it forward to future, you know, generations, right? This teenagers nowadays, this is what they know. This is what they're growing up with, right? Yep. And so, you know, they don't know privacy the way you or I did, or nor do they know how to value it. So that is going to change, you know, and very, very rarely will, unless it's really instilled by parents, will people really understand what it means to be private. And if you cannot, if you are expecting instant access, you know, these texts and messages over social media to take priority, and most of us are functioning like that. If you get a push notification from your smartphone, whatever you're doing is now secondary to this text or this message on your Facebook wall. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, with this instant communication that we're doing, this expectation to make it a priority, the lack of reflection, right? Because if you can't be comfortable with silence, then you're not able to truly mentally reflect on something before you respond. There's this reactionary impulse. My prediction is that we're going to see more and more cases of addiction, more and more cases of ADHD or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, impulse control issues, more interpersonal problems, more cases of divorce. I see a lot of problems. And then if you take it further, so socially, what is that going to mean? Politically, what is that going to mean? You know, if everyone is beginning to function this way, or in terms of their education, and then, you know, Facebook is not a national phenomenon. It is a global phenomenon. Mm-hmm. What does it mean to foreign affairs, right? If you cannot reflect and function as humans the way that we used to, I think we're in trouble. Mm-hmm. I do. There's many benefits, but, you know, it's just kind of like this thing of, just because we can have this instant access all the time doesn't mean that we should. Mm-hmm. And I don't think people are taking enough time to think about that. Yeah, and how we're changing.
I think I'd like you to give our listeners and viewers some concrete ways of, you know, getting back themselves, so to speak. Yes. But first, address the generation gap a bit. You know, those who are under 18 versus those above. What are the dynamic differences? How would a mother or father, for instance, with their youngsters, encourage them to use it responsibly or in a healthy way?
The number one question I get from parents is, how do I get my child off of social media? And if they are around the age of 16 or so, the answer is, you don't. It's not the answer they want to hear, but this is their world. And I'm going to age myself, right? So in my time, it was hanging out at the mall. And in the 90s, it was, you know, rave parties or so. People find a way. It's not so much about trying to monitor your teen, because I think that is almost impossible with all of these networks and all of these smartphone apps popping up every single day. You know, parents think that they're monitoring their teens, and many teens actually have a dummy Facebook page as a decoy. So they're, you know, so they would say, well, my mom's on it, so I have to put a update every once in a while just so she thinks that she's monitoring me. Meanwhile, I'm on these 10 other ones. Mm-hmm. Right. And so instead of trying to, you know, set limits in terms of like, don't do this, don't do that, I think parents should sit down with their children and try to understand these networks. How is YouTube different than Twitter? How many friends do you have on, or followers do you have on Twitter? What is it about this particular platform that you enjoy? And then sit together with them and go through the privacy settings, explaining to them that what you see and hear is not always what is true, that people embellish and edit themselves. And there are some very dangerous people out there as well who pretend to be people that they are not. Mm-hmm. And that has led to cyberbullying and suicides with teens, and to teach them the golden rule, in the sense that, you know, you want to treat other people the way that you want to be treated. teach them about privacy. Again, we think in older generations, you know, anything above generation X and above, think that it's a given. People know what privacy is, but the reality is that generation Y, they don't. Not really. Mm-hmm. And to have them appreciate it and to see it as something sacred. What happens in your relationship should remain within your relationship and not something that should be shared with everyone. And also, you know, just to, you know, another thing teens do is they do the screenshot. So there's accountability everywhere. There's no such thing as this is just between you and I. Mm-hmm. So people are ratting themselves out to each other and they have evidence for it to try to dissuade them from doing these sort of things and teaching them that, you know, best friends are best friends and things are sacred.
Right. You mentioned earlier that even with the best efforts to try to monitor, mm-hmm. set privacy settings, this kind of thing, mm-hmm. that Facebook finds a way that your information is going to get distributed.
Absolutely.
You're going to get tagged in someone else's feed, whatever it is. Is there any way to avoid that?
The way to avoid it is to not post what you would not want repeated. Whenever I do meet with teenagers, I do talks around, you know, to different high schools, I warn them that colleges do look at profiles. Mm-hmm. I used to work at one, so I can, you know, tell them that for certain. And here's a test that I tell people, like, what is appropriate to post and what is not. I say this, imagine all of your friends, all of your associates, all of your family members in a small supermarket. Right. And if you are comfortable grabbing a bullhorn and announcing something to everyone that you know, then go ahead and post it. If there's any sense of hesitancy on your part, then you might want to think twice about it, because people do tag, people copy and paste. And even Facebook in itself, you know, their privacy, their terms are longer than the U.S. Constitution, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. And there's this little itty bitty line that says that, you know, they own whatever you put on there. They can use at their discretion anything that you post and even anything that you delete. Mm-hmm. So even if it's on there for a second and you change your mind, they have information about you. And we know this. This is another way we're changing, you know, is that we know corporations are watching us. We know that government is watching us. We know all of this. It's like the 1984 Big Brother, right?
Yeah.
And we don't care. That's the difference between us and in the book, is that they did care. We don't care. As long as we have an audience, we'll keep posting, and we have let that go. We should care.
Do you think that the revelations with Edward Snowden and the privacy concerns, that we're going to come full circle and people are going to say, well, I'm not going to do the Facebook thing anymore, or, you know, just make a decision against it?
The closest I think that we've gotten was to the Messenger app that Facebook came out with recently, where they wanted access to, they will have access to all of your contacts and all of their phone numbers. And people became very nervous, right? And they always had, I think this is the first time that they really stated it, right? And some people chose, no, I'm not going to put that on my cell phone. I'll just message people from my home computer. Mm-hmm. That is probably the closest, and that has really angered people, along with the sense of the social experiment that Facebook did not too long ago, where they experimented on about 700 of their users, where they would post depressing content to see if users would post depressing content right back once they saw something. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, people did. If you are exposed to depressing content, you will be depressed. Mm-hmm. And they did this without permission. And that also angered people. And there's questions as to whether or not that was ethical or legal at this point.
Right.
Do I think people will get off of Facebook? I'd like to believe so, but I don't see that happening anytime soon, unless another similar network. I think there is one, I forgot the name right offhand. I think it's called Elio or something.
Hello,
thank you. Yeah. Is coming out, and people are on waiting lists already signing up for this without even knowing what it's going to be like. People are already signing up.
It's that whole thing. I don't want to miss out, right?
Exactly. FOMO, fear of missing out. And so now there's this new thing. Well, if everyone's going to migrate there, that's where I need to be. And, you know, I myself took a Facebook vacation once I started feeling overwhelmed myself, like, this is too much. I'm seeing some things from my friends that I was not expecting, a little bit too much drama, or, you know, you just see a different side of people. Mm-hmm. And it's not Facebook. It's just brings out There's something about it that just brings out the best parts of us and the worst parts of us. Mm-hmm. And it is, you know, metaphorically, the computer has kind of morphed into an emotional shield, while the keyboard has morphed into a bridge between our every thought, feeling, and the world, mm-hmm. right? And so that false sense of protection with this instant ability to express ourselves is what gets us in trouble. But despite that, you know, people who try to take a break find that they really can't, because all of a sudden you feel cut off from the world. People no longer email you, right? It's almost a thing from the past, unless it's work related, email you with news. And you do kind of miss out on things, you know? So if there's events or so, it's like, oh, I'm sorry you didn't know about it, but I did post it on Facebook.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to ask, before we close, I am going to ask you what you did on a personal mm-hmm. level to get a healthier presence or use Facebook in a healthier way for yourself. But first, I want you to highlight a couple of the 10 addictions that you have mentioned in the book about that come about with Facebook. Just maybe two or three of them.
Okay. There's the sense that you are compromising your relationships, and you are thinking you're compromising your relationships or your job or important aspects of your life. You are thinking about Facebook a lot. Like if you are not able to check it, let's say you forget your phone at home and you are just ruminating about it on in your mind, that is also a sign of it. And if you begin to hide your Facebook use or you lie about it, you know, so when someone asks you directly, how often do you use Facebook? And you say, oh, like twice a day, right? It's really like 50 times. Yeah. You're hiding something because you are afraid of how you are being perceived. And so those are three, you know, you asked for three signs that, you know, there is some addictive quality, which is very similar to anything else. If you are drinking too much, you underreport how much you are drinking. You're thinking about how much, you know, you wish you could drink, you know, at that time, and it is affecting various parts of your life. Mm-hmm. And in terms of creating a balance, right, I ask people to simply keep in mind that, you know, to come back to or to begin to appreciate their real life relationships. And, you know, I'm not an advocate for getting off of social media. You know, that's not what Facebook is about. It's just about gaining insight, right? And once we have this insight, we can make different decisions. One thing I love to do, and I encourage other people to do it, is that if you are at a dinner table with friends, all cell phones should go in the center of the table, and the first person to pick up their phone for any reason, even a call, is the first person that's going to pay for the check.
Wow, I like that. That's pretty good.
And it works like a charm because, you know, if especially you have a big group of people, you do not want to be picking it up. And if it is a catastrophic event, people will find you. Okay, so if it's important enough, you know, most things really can wait.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. As parents should put some limits. Again, I don't know how much they can control social media use, but they can put computers and such, you know, in a general area of the house and limit how much use they have. And so, you know, if they tell their kids to do homework, they should be around to see, you know, that they're actually doing their homework. Cell phones should be in another part of a teenager's life aside from the bedroom so that they aren't on it until 3 a.m. in the morning. Mm-hmm. And I say, you know, enjoy life, you know, even be a little bit more authentic with yourself, you know, like you make fun out of yourself. You know, if you do something embarrassing, post about it, you know, be you and try not to embellish or exaggerate what you do. And if you feel the need to do that, then instead of exaggerating, how about you do it? You know, just come back to reality. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, enjoy the sunset before you feel the need to record it. How about calling your friend instead of, you know, just typing in happy birthday to fill in the obligation, you know, on their wall?
Yes.
Make more plans to hang out with people socially. Take your wife out on date night. You know, that's also a huge one. Like when was the last time you guys did date night? It's like, well, we're married. And I'm like, and you still got to do, you know, take your teenagers out, go out camping, go out, you know, do more together. Right. That is how you create balance. So you can enjoy your digital interactions, but they should be second only to your real life relationships.
Right. So with your book, what is the biggest takeaway that you would like people to have? I'm sure you wrote the book to offer people a way to transform themselves in a way. So just, you know, encapsulate in your final answer, you know, what you want people to get from the book.
What I want them to get is just an idea of the potential harm that prolonged social media can do. It can lead to addiction. It can lead to, you know, us losing a sense of ourselves, and changes the way that we perceive ourselves and our friends. You know, it can lead to relationship issues, and to simply not give it as much importance as we are giving it. It's becoming our world, and it shouldn't be. You know, we should not be walking around like zombies, staring at our smartphones, walking into traffic. That's not normal, you know?
Yeah, or falling downstairs, whatever.
Falling downstairs. And we see YouTube videos of this, you know, where people, you know, it's like, you know, if there's a fire, you might want to go down the stairs before you take a picture of it, right? you know, just, and not throw caution to the wind. You know, place more importance on reality versus the digital world. And, you know, enjoy it, continue to enjoy it, but, you know, just see it for what it is. It is not reality. It should not take precedence over real life relationships. And hopefully it doesn't end real life relationships due to some misunderstanding. Call people, ask to meet with them, discuss these things with them. And so, you know, there have been other psychologists that have written about social media, but they tended to be a little bit more on the highbrow or academic sense. You know, I wrote mine in a simplistic form that anybody could understand, right? Because I wanted to try to reach a broader audience. And so, you know, maybe just take a look and see if anything applies to you or any of your loved ones. And maybe, you know, if it doesn't apply to you directly, maybe you can give them advice. You know, there's chapters that cover almost everything that we discussed here. And so, you know, I think with insight is usually the first step to changing any behavior, just adjusting your life in order to be happier.
Right. Okay. I've been speaking with Dr. Susana Flores. The book is called Face Hooked: How Facebook Affects Our Emotions, Relationships, and Lives. This is a book that's at the forefront of many more to come that are going to be questioning, you know, the effects of social media on our lives. So, Susana, thank you for writing it and putting a different a look at things on Facebook. I appreciate you joining me.
I appreciate you having me on your show. Thank you so much.